'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times, hard times, come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Hard times, come again no more. Seek mirth and beauty and music light and gay. There are frail forms fainting at the door. Though their voices are silent, their pleading looks will say, oh, hard times come again no more. 'Tis the song, the sigh. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more.
You got friends.
Hello, this is Daffodil. You're listening to Community Radio KBOO Portland.
Got troubles. I got them too.
Today on Wings.
Hoodwinked in the Hothouse. From the webinar on Indigenous resistance to climate false solutions.
What's the bigger picture? Fossil fuels, mining, uranium industry, these things are not on their agenda. And this is the 26th conference of the parties.
And for the United Nations to not recognize the emissions of the military across the world is a great travesty to this climate justice movement. War is really fueling the warming of our world.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Mariah Gillardin produces TUC Radio. TUC stands for Time of Useful Consciousness. That's the period between when a cockpit loses oxygen and the pilot blacks out. In that brief moment, it's still possible to save the plane, or by analogy, save the planet. For a recent series of her programs, Mariah chose selections from a webinar on Indigenous resistance to climate false solutions, organized by the Indigenous Environmental Network. Wings is sharing voices of women from that series. Here's Mariah Gillardin.
By all records, fossil fuel burning has increased in spite of the quarter-century-long efforts of the United Nations Conferences of Parties. That's in part due to the power of big oil corporations, but also because of the promotion of and subsidies to false solutions. For example, an indigenous community gets an offer to replant the mangrove forest on the coast. Everybody is happy until they trace the money and realize that a giant fossil fuel company takes the planted trees for carbon credits, which allow them to drill more oil, raising the sea level that will swallow the mangroves. Most of these false solutions disproportionately affect indigenous and poor communities. Their sacrifices, as well as their resistance and victories, have remained unknown or been ignored.
Hello, relatives. My name is Eagle Woman. I am Mandan Herata Arekra from so-called North Dakota in the so-called United States of America, also known as Turtle Island. And I'm very honored to be here today representing myself and also the work I do with the Indigenous Environmental Network. And I'm showing pictures of my lived experience. on a reservation in North Dakota that has had to deal with a lot. And this is a story that encompasses a lot of our Indigenous populations when it comes to the climate crisis and when it comes to fossil fuel development. So I'm hoping to give an understanding of a bigger picture of our experiences as people who Ma Ditugua, long time ago, lived on the land, relied on the land. We lived in Earth Lodge villages along the waters because we were farmers. We grew corn, we grew squash, we grew beans, and our men even tended their own tobacco. We had a lifestyle in which our villages were connected and took care of each other as peoples of a community. And what happened was smallpox came and colonization began happening. And we started seeing other tribes were being pushed from the East Coast to the Midwest and onward as colonization came to the now so-called United States. And that's when we started getting put into reservations. Ours was the Fort Laramie Treaty of 1851. The Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara nations, three separate nations, were put together on one reservation because our numbers had been so decimated by smallpox. And we were so similar that we were now known as the three affiliated tribes by the federal government. Instead of earth lodges, we then began living in structures that were built for us by white men. The year was 1860. There's a reason why our reservations start with the name Fort. My reservation is called Fort Berthold. That's because it was actually a fort that we weren't allowed to leave. We were placed on this land, and at that time it was 12 million acres. It has over the years been seceded by presidential and executive orders to just under 1 million acres where it is today. They put us here because they figured there wasn't anything here. There was no resources, it wasn't valuable land. Well, as it turned out, the very first thing that happened to my people is that we were flooded out of our lands. Flooding in St. Louis and Missouri that was happening because they were mismanaging their waterways started happening. So a series of dams was built. Every single dam was built below a reservation. Mine, Fort Berthold, was flooded by the Garrison Dam. It was the largest earthen construction project at the time. And by the time our tribal chairman signed on to this project, he's there crying in this picture, our chairman George Gillette. They were already $60 million into the construction by the time we agreed to it. So that was the first thing that happened. First, it was the reservation, and then we were forced off of our bottomlands, which was where all of our class one and class two agricultural lands were flooded. We were forced onto the high ground. That's when we became ranchers. You know, they told us you have to have cattle. You have to be living this way now. Your agricultural lands are flooded and you're going to go live on the high ground. And then another assault came in the form of the fossil fuel industry. North Dakota is one of the highest lignite coal states in the country. And so as a child, I had heard from my grandparents how we had been displaced. And then I started to get taught in school how it was so important for me to go into the fossil fuel industry. So here I am as a seventh grader, standing in a dump of one of these large industry places being told this is my future. And then after that, we've seen contamination of mercury in all of our waterways. Every single bit of our over 11,000 miles of rivers, lakes, and streams in North Dakota is contaminated by mercury. And now we have the oil development for fracking. Fracking only began in 2005 when the Energy Policy Act was changed. It was the Halliburton loophole, called that because the former CEO of the company, Halliburton, was able to put a loophole in to say that we didn't have to tell what the chemicals were that we were using as company. Well, I shouldn't say we, they, as oil companies, didn't have to tell the chemicals that were being used. That's why fracking is allowed to continue, because of this Halliburton loophole that changed in the 2005 Energy Policy Act. It's also why it's so devastating to our people. Here we are on a reservation where they put us thinking there was nothing there, but then it turned out we had coal. It turned out we had oil. And in North Dakota, they're fracking for the oil, not the natural gas. The natural gas is actually a byproduct. And so we started seeing all of these rigs popping up all over. Places where my grandma used to fast, like this place, were no longer available to us. We were seeing these in our wheat fields, these signs that said industrial zoned, No longer were we the breadbasket of the country to feed the rest of the country. We're now a site where trucks infiltrate our roads, where they take over our cisterns and our waterways, where they kill people and have killed people in accidents, running on the roads, running people over, and have dumped their frack water right onto the highways. And they have done this all unjustly and as a result of a system of the way our reservation was set up. And the jurisdiction laws between Native people and non-Native people were set up. So there's a history here of this setting up of Indigenous peoples so that when accidents occur, like this spill, nothing is done. The spill in 2014 has contaminated our land. It's still contaminated. We had to do our own studies to find out that this earth is still radioactive. They put little sandbags out when we have spills and say this is going to protect our waterways. Yeah, our water has blue-green algae blooms, killing our fish, and this is what our people drink. This is actual water taken out 1 mile from our water intake plant. No doctoring, this was blue. And they told us it's fine. Little did we know that they're toxic, blue-green algae blooms. You shouldn't drink the water, you shouldn't swim in the water, which we were. And then we started having fish kills. Now, North Dakota is in the central part, Midwest, right in the middle of Turtle Island. The geographic central of North America. We're very rural. So these lights here, those aren't lights. No, they're flares. They're flaring the natural gas because it wasn't economically viable for them to capture the natural gas. So when they talk about natural gas as a bridge fuel and you see issues like in Texas, when water is being shut down, power is being shut down, they're saying, oh, what are we gonna do? We have no energy. They're just flaring all this natural gas even, not even capturing it because it's not economically viable to them. So we're breathing this in. Our children are having asthmas, cancers. All of our people are sick because of the carcinogens, which are cancer causing. And these are just a few that come along with fracking. These things that we breathe every day, that go into our water, that go into our soil, which we grow our food in every single day, happening to our communities. But yet there's a social aspect of the man camps that came. And they just started to destroy our communities. People from around the world looking for jobs in industry. It's all about jobs, they say. We started seeing violence against our women, rape. We started seeing missing and murdered Indigenous women increasing. Violence on the rise. We started seeing drugs. So when people like Ashley here got caught up in heroin that came when the industry came, and when she died, people said, well, she was one of those druggies. She didn't get the help that she needed as a result of an industry that brought this violence to us in this colonized world, that capitalism that brought us to this point. To where our own leaders say, we fought against the reservation and we lost. We fought against our lands being flooded and we lost. We fought against the coal and we lost. And so why not, if you can't beat them, join them. And so a lot of our leaders in Indian country today are in this struggle of having to depend on either becoming economically dependent on our own cultural destruction. Internationally, what's the bigger picture? The Indigenous Environmental Network, we work against this false solutions of carbon markets and carbon trading. These REDS projects, this idea of reducing emissions from deforestation and forest degradation, which is pushed within the United Nations. Some of our early work was saying, actually, this is reaping profits from evictions, land grabs, deforestation, and destruction of biodiversity. Well, going into this COP now, they've changed the language to be very dangerous language around net zero and pushing for things within Article 6 and talking about how they're going to decrease the emissions in the sky, the carbon dioxide emissions. They don't ever talk about keeping it in the ground. That's not on the agenda at COP26. Fossil fuels, mining, uranium industry, these things are not on their agenda. And this is the 26th conference of the parties.
On Wings, you're listening to Eagle Woman, also known as Candy, an organizer for the Indigenous Environmental Network. speaking at a webinar on false solutions to climate change. When she speaks of REDS projects, that's the acronym for Reduced Deforestation and Forest Degradation, a popular UN-sponsored program. It's discussed in Article 6 of the Key Outcomes document of COP26 in the context of carbon credit trading.
And while all of that is happening, these REDS projects, the Amazon rainforest is being destroyed as a result of what they call solutions. This picture shows their solution. Because what they do is they say, oh, it's okay for us to destroy the lungs of the earth, which is the Amazon rainforest. We can clear cut that. And I know that they say that because I meet my friends in these spaces, the United Nations spaces. My friends tell me this is what is happening in our communities, Candy. This is what they're doing to us. They're coming in and they're displacing us and telling us how we're going to operate and how we're going to run. My friend Gloria here is actually on a list of a person who is endangered because of speaking out against injustices in her community around oil and around the industry. She's in the global south and she's still standing up fighting. And I take so much pride and respect in knowing these women and these fighters and these warriors, because even though I have what I showed you happening here in the belly of the beast in the United States, I have a certain privilege just by being here. And we have to lift up our brothers and sisters in the global south, many of whom can't even go to these United Nations conferences, especially this year, from being shut out, which is great for the government because they'll try to sneak in anything that they can to continue using carbon trading and carbon offsets as their solution, which is a false solution. And my brothers and sisters in Australia, we've worked with them. I've reached out and I've worked with the Seed Youth Mob in Australia, and I've gone there because they were told that fracking in the Northern Territories wasn't going to upset anything, that all it was going to be a hole in the ground the size of a billy can, and that they didn't have to worry about fracking. So I went to them and I told them my struggle and my story, and they were like, what? The companies lied to us? Yes, because even if you have free, prior, and informed consent, that doesn't include necessarily the actual reality of what it's going to look like, what these details mean. The devil is in the details. So they'll lie to communities about REDS projects. They'll lie to communities about fracking coal, uranium, and other mining, but then get some person, maybe one or two people on a tribal council or in a leadership position to sign up, and therefore they consider it cleared. And so we continue to meet with our aunties in other countries, like my aunties here that I met in Australia fighting to protect country. Meeting with our relatives when I was in Bonn, Germany, who were again fighting a coal plant, a coal, huge mining operation, where they were just clear cutting and destroying and mining and strip mining and destroying lands. So meeting with people and understanding the struggle globally from a local perspective to an international perspective, and becoming a sky protector as a result of knowing the truth. There is so much power in the truth. And we can all get behind understanding the truth by joining our organizations and doing a little bit of research and going out on the front lines and speaking back about what's happening in our own communities locally, but then also expanding that to work with international organizations like WECAN, Women's Earth Climate Action Network, doing really good work lifting up women and their stories. Or organizations like MADRE, who is amazing, connecting women internationally and bringing us all together to share our stories and our struggles so that we can work collectively. We do things at home like the water blessing and healing walks that we haven't been able to have because of COVID, but we've had prayer circles virtually. We've gone to DC several times, Washington, DC, to say this is not what we want in our communities. Listen to us as Indigenous peoples. Listen to the stories that we have about how to tackle and combat the climate crisis. We set up teepees on the lawn and make ourselves known, because we're always facing invisibility here in the United States. Our populations were so decimated by colonization that we now only make up 2% of the population in the United States. So we have decided to do a just transition program and curriculum. This is at the Haskell Nations Indian University in Lawrence, Kansas, where we are implementing a just transition program right within our schooling. And we are reaching out to higher institutions to do this as well. We are reaching out to elementary schools to stop brainwashing our kids like I was, and to teach our kids what it means to have a just transition. And there is no one size fits all. That's what the US tries to do and what the United Nations tries to do, is one size fits all is gonna save us, and that does not work. We have to do small scale, local distributed actions and education forums. We are building earth lodges in our community again, remembering our culture, bringing back our culture, how we used to live. Sure, this one has a cement floor because it's a modern version that we can use for cultural programming, for teaching our language that, yes, is unfortunately being lost. And it's been a struggle to learn because of the boarding school eras and how our grandparents were beat if they spoke their language, by a US government system that actually has a termination era where they tried to kill us, but we survived. Our grandmothers survived. And we're still here fighting, trying to find ways for energy to work for us. So small scale distributed systems of power, like Lakota Solar Enterprises. Henry Red Cloud once told me he knows how to build a solar panel using bone and ash and the sun and a blower in order to create power and energy. This is at Standing Rock, right by where the pipeline runs. And it's not energy of what we're wasting right now. It's not energy to power like cities, but we need small scale. We need to uplift our communities like native renewables, because these large scale corporate schemes in wind and solar, you heard, they're digging out the precious minerals in South America once again to have these giant corporations and to continue to make money about it. That's not what it's about. It's about not just surviving, but also thriving, but not off the backs of other people. And let's talk about our food systems, because if we can't even feed ourselves, we're not truly sovereign nations. Our indigenous principles of just transition, these booklets that we have, you can go on ienearth.org and you can actually look into the booklet yourself and make it make sense for your community. This is one of the projects that we're working on as the Indigenous Environmental Network to show what a just transition might look like in our communities. We are having basket making sessions in our communities where my husband was able to help organize a 3-day workshop to relearn our culture and use our own baskets instead of plastics, for example, in our community, because this is what we used to do, a long time ago. We are able to bring community members together to relearn our culture, to laugh and to tell stories, to grow small scale community gardens, which are able to produce enough crops. Our communities are small so that we can roast and dry enough corn to give every elder in our community one bag of corn and beans. So every elder was able to make their own corn soup, one of our traditional foods. And we're gonna grow that project. If we don't speak for them, who will? These suits at the conference in the United Nations? No, our kids are sacred. Our kids are precious. Just like all of the four-legged and the winged and those that swim in the waters, they need us to be the voice for them. If we don't speak for them, who will? That's the work that we do at the Indigenous Environmental Network with our allies as a whole, the It Takes Roots Coalition, who now has our hoodwinked in the hothouse pamphlet that you guys saw and you can get online, to talk about all of the false solutions and to call them out. And we're doing it because it's common sense. We collectively as humanity need to save ourselves. Matsikinads, everybody. I'll stop there. Thank you.
Monica De Oro is Just Transition Fellow with the Micronesia Climate Change Alliance.
I really wanted to bring the experiences of the people in the Pacific on the opposite end of the world where most of you are to this conversation, because our experiences with climate change are so dire compared to Asia and where the US is.
beautiful homeland and home seas I have are magical. I live in the islands of the Marianas, which is made up of Guam and the Commonwealth of the Northern Marianas. And also in Micronesia, there's Palau, there's Republic of the Marshall Islands and the Federated States of Micronesia, as well as Kiribati and Nauru. It's about 2 million square miles of under a million people. And most of the islands have been affiliated with and colonized by the U.S., including the Hawaiian Islands and some of the Samoan Islands. Most are affiliated through compact agreements with the United States, or in my case, the islands of the Marianas as territories or modern day colonies. So people from the Pacific are on the front lines of climate change. And of course, the people in the Pacific contribute very little to this crisis. We don't emit very much carbons, we don't use very much. And it's really unfortunate that our voices aren't very, very much listened to or heard at these international talks. And especially my people, because we're territories of the United States, we aren't invited to even regional talks in the Pacific about our mitigation plans or adaptation plans to climate change, and definitely not in any sort of way that would bring justice to my communities. One of the biggest things throughout Micronesia is just our relationship and our historical issues regarding colonization and militarization of our lands. Because we are between Asia and between the US, we are often used as pawns between the world superpowers. And here you see some photos of nuclear bomb testings in the Marshall Islands. And then of course, World War II ravaged and completely damaged most of our homelands throughout the islands. And war is still being heavily pushed as economic solutions in our communities. I come from Guam, and a third of our island is used for military use. And right now the US is creating firing ranges over our single sole source of drinking water. And these firing ranges will undoubtedly lead to lead contamination of this water. And these are over sacred sites. They're demolishing ancestral sites that were used for thousands of years by my ancestors without any free, informed, and prior consent, because we are a US territory and there's not being much done by the UN or by others to really put pressure on the United States to support the decolonization efforts of the Chamorro people on Guam. And this military encroachment and expansion is happening here in the Marianas, in the Northern Marianas, where they want to expand bases. And of course, the Pacific means peace, and war has been waged throughout our islands. And also our islands have been used for war, and our bodies have been used for war, because enlistment rates throughout Micronesia are so high. And even in the state of Hawaii, also places like Okinawa. And for the United Nations to not recognize the emissions of the military across the world is a great travesty to this climate justice movement. War is really fueling the warming of our world. It's really important to hold these entities accountable. The US military is the single largest consumer of fossil fuels. All the fossil fuels that are being pushed through the pipelines that are being resisted throughout Turtle Island are coming to my islands so that they could be fueling jet fuels and bombing pristine islands just north of here. All of these things are interconnected, and it's really important that we do what we can to bring peace to our communities and real genuine security through principled practice, through realizing the just transition and uplifting the indigenous people around the world. The government's not seeing that at the United Nations Conference of Parties is really disheartening to me as a young organizer, but I really find a lot of hope in these sorts of conversations and these on the ground grassroots movements. And I really hope that more can be done for us to push this political power to really decolonize, decarbonize, and demilitarize our planet, because those are real climate solutions.
That was Monica De Oro. She is Just Transition Fellow with MCCA, the Micronesia Climate Change Alliance. Monica presented at a webinar organized by the New School in New York City in cooperation with the IEN, the Indigenous Environmental Network, in preparation of the climate conference in Glasgow. The 42-page pamphlet that is the result of 2 decades of research, analysis, and active resistance is entitled Hoodwinked in the Hothouse: Resist False Solutions to Climate Change. It can be downloaded for free at climatefalsesolutions.org. That's one word, climatefalsesolutions.org.
Wings thanks Mariah Gillardin and TUC Radio for the audio in this program. Thanks also to your community radio stations, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, editor of the book Women and the Gift Economy. The Wings Sound logo is from Lee Bono's album, A Circle is Cast. I'm Frieda Worden. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Welcome once again to Film at 11 here on Community Radio KBOO Portland. Today, we look at Guillermo del Toro's latest, along with a controversial Polanski film and a new monograph on the Visconti film. First up, Stephen Hood joins us to talk about Nightmare Alley, opening today. We are joined by Stephen Hood, one of our regular reviewers, to discuss Nightmare Alley, which is Guillermo del Toro's new adaptation of the novel, but also the film with Tyrone Power from the late 40s. And the book is kind of a difficult, racy read. It's a grim, I don't know if you'd call it existential approach, but it's definitely the kind of book that French writers and readers gravitated to when they thought of American film noir novels and movies. But you haven't seen the original film.
No, I haven't seen the original film, and I haven't read the book either. So I came into this film completely blind.
Oh, that's good. Okay, so, but you did know it was by Guillermo del Toro. Did that create any set of expectations?
I think it did. Guillermo del Toro very much creates a world of the bizarre that I look forward to seeing.